In India, we are very familiar with these ideas of the many lokas and many gods and goddesses, invisible spirits, and so on and so forth. It may sound very strange to the Western ears, but in India, in East generally, and particularly in India, these ideas are very common, and there is hardly any Hindu or a Buddhist who does not believe in other worlds and invisible beings. There are many kinds of spirits or gods or higher beings spoken of in our sacred literature. They are called as gods, demons, and so on and so forth. In the Hindu scriptures, 33 classes of gods are spoken of. 33 classes of gods. They are 12 Adityas, 11 Rudras, 8 Vasus, and 2 Ashwins. 33 gods. In the Indian pantheon, there are 33 crores of gods. Now, there is another conception which is very popular. That is, deities preside over four points of the compass, but also deities preside over the intermediate points of the four compass. So they are Ashtadikpalakas. They are the rulers of the world and who preside over the eight directions of the compass. North, northeast, east, southeast, south, southwest, west, northwest, 8. And names are given. Names, we hardly understand anything at all. But even in this, the very etymological meaning of the names, there is clue to the theogony, the secret of the theogony of the gods. The north is presided over a Kubera, northeast by Soma, and east by Indra, southeast by Agni, south by Yama, southwest by Surya, and west by Varuna, and lastly northwest by Vayu. So these are Ashtadikpalakas, the rulers of the world, who rule the destinies of nations and govern the worlds, according to Hindu pantheon. This is true also in all great religions. In Zoroastrian system, there are Amshas Pentas. They are the rulers of the world and their counterparts. In the Jewish system, it is the Elohim. Elohim is a collective noun for a number of gods. They speak of Sephiroth. There are 7 Sephiroth, the 7 classes of gods. They speak of 7 Sephiroth, and they speak of Sephirothal tree. The whole the constitution of the cosmos, in its intelligent constitution, intelligent aspect, consisting of various hierarchies of gods, is depicted as a tree. They call it as a Sephirothal tree. And in the Hindu system, they are called Prajapati. Prajapati means the creators of creatures. People ordinarily speak of the maker of, my maker, your maker, maker of men, maker of worlds. Literally, Prajapati means that. And there are numerous Manus, Rishis, and so on and so forth. And in the Greek system, they are called Theos, Theoi, and Cratylus. In the Plato's dialogue on Cratylus, he gives the etymological meaning of Theoi. Theos means to lead, to run, which means that these intracosmic intelligences govern and lead and rule the world, inner and the external, according to cosmic laws, to run Thioy. And in Thioy, we give them a general name, Dhyan Chauhans. And these are of various hierarchies, from the lowest to the highest evolved. And Saint Paul also, in the Corinthians and other epistles, you will see him speaking of many gods, principalities, powers, and so on and so forth. He gives a list of names of various deities. So in a Christian system, we have archangels, and there are many kinds of angels. Similarly, you know, these are spirits, and in all great religions, they speak of many worlds. This physical world is not the only world. There are other worlds besides this. And in Quran, you find the statement, there are seven heavens. Muhammad speaks of seven heavens. This is perfectly in accord with what the Hindus call seven lokas, saptalokas. They are bhuloka, bhuvaloka, swarloka, maharloka, janaloka, and taparloka, and satyaloka. Similarly, there are talas. There are 14 lokas according to Hindus. And there are manus, there are 14 manus. And there are a number of rishis. And each rishi with generating or producing or evolving various kinds of species. So these are all symbolical way of representing the cosmogony and theogony and anthropogony. By that we mean the constitution of the cosmos, how the cosmos come into being, how it is, what is constitution, what it is made up of, and how it is evolved, and how man is related to it, and all this is a profound knowledge. Now, coming to science. Science doesn't accept this. Science will not accept this. You know, in the ancient source we read every alternately, you know, encyclically, when we cover these three fundamental propositions in ancient source, we recall this particular statement that ancients knew the soul of things, the very kernel of matter, and that science does not believe in soul of things. Therefore, science sees only external work of form. It does not believe in anything other than what it calls as physical reality, which can be demonstrated to our senses and mind, and anything which cannot be demonstrated to our limited experience as physical perception, it does not admit at all. So it is confined only to the physical reality, which is only a very small and illusory aspect of total reality. That is the important thing that we must remember. And yet, mind you, all the great, this is the position of the official scientist. But it is not so in the case of great scientists, such as Sir Isaac Newton. We know that Isaac Newton is credited with having discovered gravity, and credited with having discovered the laws of motion. What the modern science teaches is that gravity is something that is inherent in the brute matter. And the gravitational force that is inherent in matter acts on other objects by a certain gravitational laws which Newton has enunciated. Now, this is an absurdity, because many a great scientist have said, how can an inanimate brute matter have such faculty of attracting and be attracted by other bodies and have a very harmonious revolution of spheres in the sky without a single deviation from harmony. How can this happen? And Newton himself didn't believe in it, mind you. This is what, the secret doctrine recalls what Newton thought. In his letter to Bentley, his correspondent, Newton said, this is impossibility. Brute matter cannot have the faculty of acting by itself at all, unless and until there is another external, intelligent force acting on it. He called that intelligent higher force as God. I'll read this small portion. In section 11, introduction, he expresses the opinion that there is some subtle spirit by the force and action of which all movements of matter are determined. This is Newton's opinion. In his third letter to Bentley, he says, it is inconceivable that inanimate brute matter should, without the mediation of something else, which is not material, operate upon and affect other matter without mutual contact, as it must do if gravitation, in the sense of Epicurus, be essential and inherent in it. The gravity should be innate, inherent, and essential to matter, so that one body may act upon another at a distance through a vacuum without the mediation of anything else by and through which their action may be conveyed from one to another, is to me the greatest absurdity. I believe no man who has in philosophical matters a competent faculty of thinking can ever fall into. Gravity must be caused by an agent acting constantly according to certain laws. But whether this agent be material or immaterial, I have left to the consideration of my readers. This is Newton's opinion. Now look at what Kepler says. Now Kepler has similar ideas. He said, Sun is a great magnet and solar substance is immaterial. In the sense, not material, not as we know it, which science also today admits. And then he provided for a constant motion and restoration of sense energy and planetary motion. Planetary motion, if it is not constantly regulated and intelligently adjusted, it can never maintain that harmonious movement for ages, unless there is an intelligent guiding force. Kepler believed in it and Newton believed in it. But orthodox modern science rejects one of the highest pioneers of science. And then coming to Tycho Brahe, another great scientist. Look what Tycho Brahe says. Now, what he said was, if you look for corroboration in more modern scientific times, we find Tycho Brahe recognizing in the stars a triple force, divine, spiritual, vital. Kepler putting together the Pythagorean sentence, the sun, the guardian of Jupiter, and the verses of David, he placed his throne in the sun. The Lord is the sun, and so on and so forth. That all globes disseminated through space were rational intelligences circulating around the sun, in which reside a pure spirit of fire, the source of the general harmony. It is intelligent forces acting through the sun which regulates the harmonious revolution of spheres according to ancient science. Now, similarly, if you take Darwinian evolution, Darwin very ingeniously came out with his theory of evolution of species from simple organisms to more and more complex organisms through a process of what he called natural selection. What is this natural selection? According to Darwinian theory, this natural selection is selection of the most fittest species to survive in the environment, capable of adapting itself to it and transmitting its characteristics, inherited characteristics, to the progeny. So there is selection. Now, how can this natural selection take place automatically, blindly, without any intelligence guidance? This is the materialistic bias of modern science, and yet all scientists didn't agree with it. D. Quadrophages, a great scientist, he did not agree with it, nor did Alfred Wallace, co-discoverer of the theory of evolution with Darwin. Darwin came to fame, but Wallace didn't. One of the reasons why Wallace did not was he always held to the axiom that such natural selection cannot take place without intelligent pattern, without intelligent guidance, which was not acceptable to modern scientists. Now look what he says. Moreover, one of the greatest Western evolutionists of our modern day, the co-adjutor of Darwin, Mr. A.R. Wallace, Alfred R. Wallace, discussing the inadequacy of natural selection alone to account for the physical form of man, admits the guiding action of higher intelligences as a necessary part of the great laws which govern the material universe. Modern science is unable to account for the great structural differences between the ape and man. The modern theory is man is different from the ape. That is the theory only, not a truth. And D. Quadrophages and many other scientists say it cannot be, impossible. Though there are some resemblances anatomical, but structural differences are far too many. And moreover, the capacity of the brain and the principle of mind, these two make a vast difference between the ape and man. Now, modern science is unable to account for the great structural difference and the almost impassable gulf between ape and man in terms of mind and moral nature. Man has a moral nature and intellect and mind, self-consciousness, which the ape does not have. Wallace is forced to invoke the agency of extraterrestrial intelligence in order to explain the rise of such creatures as the ape to the level of large brain and moral man of today. So, theory of evolution of human mind by natural selection is inadmissible to E.R. Wallace. So, we see science also admits that there must be intracosmic intelligences whom the ancients spoke of as gods, demons, and by various names. Now, let's try to understand this in terms of what theosophy has to teach us. Now, we all have studied that man has seven principles. Man is a sevenfold being. He has a physical body, which is visible, corresponding to the objective physical world. We have a physical body, physiological laws, chemical laws, biological laws, genetical laws, is governed by this biochemical laws. It's subject to Newton's gravity and so on and so forth. But the physical body cannot subsist without its inner, another principle, which is a model, invisible, very fine electromagnetic, made up of very, very fine electromagnetic lines of force called the astral body. The subtle body. The subtle body is the model on which the physical molecules group themselves to form the physical body. Now, we have the only part of man which is visible to the eye is his physical body. But invisible is the astral body, the design of the outer. And astral body is vehicle for the flow of the vital force current. Pranic current. So we have physical body, astral body, and then prana. And then there is a desire principle. This desire principle, kama, is generally there in all nature. And it is a motor force in all beings. Without desire, nothing can be accomplished. Desire is a motor power. Kama. Without kama, you can't do anything. And in fact, by kama, in its highest divine aspect, universe came into existence. So kama is a powerful, blind, creative force in man. So these are the perishable aspect of man. There is physical body, there is astral body, the vital principle called prana, and there is kama. These are the four principles which are the vehicles for the vehicle for the immortal spirit of man, which is spirit atma, buddhi divine soul, and manas embodied soul or self-consciousness. Atma, buddhi, manas, divine spirit, divine soul, and embodied the human soul. Atma, buddhi, manas. It is three in one, one in three. So the real man is Atma, buddhi, manas. And this real man, Atma, buddhi, manas, is divine. He cannot incarnate in the four lower principles directly because it's too spiritual and divine. And the lower four quaternary principles are too gross. So only a portion of higher divine mind comes into the body at the time of the birth of the child, even before the birth of the child in the womb, at a certain stage of development of the fetus. It, from the higher mind, an efflux, and that efflux, the small portion of the higher mind, becomes your mind here, which works with the brain and the nervous system. So our mind is psychic. Our higher mind is super psychic. Our buddhi is divine soul and atma is spirit. And the kama and astral, the kama, astral and pranic realm is the astral world. So we have the physical world, we have the astral world, we have the psychic world, we have the manasik, superior manasik world, mahatik, there is the buddhic, divine, and then the spiritual. So, and mind you, these seven principles are not seven distinct compartmentalized watertight compartments. They are the six aspects of one Atman. Spirit in the body is called Maheshwara, Bhagavad Gita teaches. So real man is a spirit in the body. The spirit in the body dwells in us, is a knower, thinker. So if this is man, so is the universe. Universe has the visible aspect, and there is the astral world, and there is the psychic world, and there is the manasik world, higher manasik, mahatik, which is the intellectual soul of the world, and even beyond that is the divine world, and the spiritual, and it is a parabrahm, it is a meta-spirit. So, see, universe also correspondingly has seven principles. So the seven principles of man are derived from the seven principles of cosmos. So man is a perfect cosmos. So in every one of these realms, there are innumerable beings of various orders. In the lower realms of astral, psychic, we have beings of lower order. And in the higher realms of manasik and buddhic, correspondingly, we have beings of a very high order, intelligent, conscious, divine beings who had passed through the human stage and become perfect and learn to live in spirit independently of the cycle of birth and death. So you see, there are hierarchies of beings. There's another way of looking at it, in order to give a rationale of how to understand this. If you take a human body in its natural way, no movement of any limb or movement of your mind or thought or speech can ever take place unless and until it is preceded by and impulse received from either mind or thought, emotion or feeling, will or volition. Is it not so? When normal, unless there is a thought or a feeling or a will, unless you will, unless you desire, unless you feel, no movement of the limbs can take place. Similarly with the universe. This is what the secret doctrine says. The whole cosmos is guided, controlled and animated by almost endless series of hierarchies of sentient beings, and each having a mission to perform, and who, whether we give them one name or another and call them Dhyan Chauhans or angels or messengers, in the sense only that they are agents of karmic and cosmic laws, They vary infinitely in their respective degrees of consciousness and intelligence. Each of these beings, now, how do we relate? How do you account for these beings? They are all products of evolution. They are products of universal evolution. Now, the whole range of beings which constitute the universe can be classified into three groups: subhuman, human, suprahuman. There are gods of lower order which are still subhuman. They are not visible. They are still subhuman. They are the conscious, intelligent, semi-conscious or semi-intelligent forces of nature which lie behind the visible phenomena we see. And these lower intelligences, lower devatas, are guided by higher intelligent forces superior to them. These are subhuman beings, subhuman and human. And those beings, souls, which have passed from subhuman to human and from human to suprahuman through evolutionary progress, have become conscious gods. The suprahuman being, Dhyan Chauhans are various. So this we must bear clearly in mind. And then, how complicated it is, I'll just give one small reading from the secret doctrine. The various kinds, they're called architects, they're called, some groups are called architects, some are builders, some are watchers, some are recorders of diverse beings. Now, just look at the how complex it is. You know, as complex as our body. Our body broadly has head and the main part of the body and the limbs. But if you take each one of them, how complicated it is. If you take single eye itself, how complicated it is. To study single eye takes whole one lifetime, such complexity. And if you study each cell, similarly with the universe, it is very complex as human anatomy. In the invisible worlds and then many divisions and the hierarchies of beings, perfectly analogous to the human constitution, every one of his faculties, senses and powers are derived from those beings. So man is a perfect copy of the great. Now look at the great canvas of beings which are inherent intracosmic intelligences. They build and rebuild the systems. There are three chief groups of builders and as many planetary spirits. Every planet is not a mere ball of earth, ball of brute matter. Every planet is as septenary as man himself is. They, each one of them have ruling intelligences, guiding intelligences. So some of the planets in the solar system like Venus and Mercury, the beings in it are far higher and more advanced than humanity of this earth. Now, coming to secret doctrine, there are three chief groups of builders and as many planetary spirits and Lipika. each group being again divided into 7 subgroups. It is impossible even in such a large work as this to enter into minute examination of even 3 principal groups, as it would demand an extra volume. The builders are the representatives of the first mind-born entities, therefore of the primeval Rishi Prajapati, also the 7 great gods of Egypt, of which Osiris is the chief, and 7 Amshaspens of Zoroastrians, with Ormazd at the head, and spirits of the face, the 7 Sephiroth separated from the triad, etc., etc. They build, or rather rebuild, every system after the night. So when the solar system goes out, it's perished. The intelligences, all great, the intercosmic intelligences become centralized in the central spiritual sun. And at the next great evolutionary period, they again come out and rebuild the system according to the plan in the universal mind, following the karma of the beings of the previous system. This is how things go. They build, or rather rebuild, every system after the night. After the night means after the dissolution of the universe. The second group of builders is the architect of our planetary chain exclusively, and third, the progenitors of humanity. Macrocosmic prototype of the macrocosm. Now, there are macrocosmic builders who build the solar system. There are builders of the planetary chain. Even the planet is sevenfold. They build the planetary chain. And there are other group of builders which build the human frame, human body, according to the pattern of the great one. So you see here how complex the higher worlds and the denizens of the higher worlds are. And now coming to another point, each one of these high beings, suprahuman and subhuman, they are all dual in nature. Dual in nature in the sense that they have intelligence and an energy of intelligence, Shiva Shakti. Shiva means conscious, intelligent idea, and that idea cannot itself produce anything. So the dynamic energy of that idea, ideation, fashions the with the precosmic substance, the created things. So there are dual in nature. And very important point to be borne in mind is these beings have no individuality of their own, like us. They are consisting of various hierarchies, and they have their hierarchical individuality, not as individual gods. Another point to be borne in mind. We can picture the hierarchies of beings, by analogy of how the army or the armed forces are organized. You have the army headquarters, which oversees the whole of the armed forces, the highest apex. And then we have the 4 commands: Southern Command, Eastern Command, Western Command, Northern Command. And each command has several corps, and each corps has brigade, and each brigade has several divisions, and each division has several companies, and each company has several platoons, each platoon has several sections. Each one of these lower one, headed by a lower order of a leader, as he reports to the higher, and the higher commands the lower. So you see the hierarchy here and how the divisions take place, similarly the cosmos. Now, as already said, human evolution and cosmic evolution takes place simultaneously. Man is a spiritual being, manasic being, psychic being, physical being, evolves pari passu with the evolution of the cosmos in the same order. So this also we must remember. Now coming to the next important point. These gods, can we worship them? Can we obtain favors from them? That's what the popular religious practices do. The secret of it says, no, they cannot be worshipped and should not be worshipped. First of all, to worship them, to ask favors from them, they must hear what you are saying. They cannot hear you. They are impersonal. They're impersonal forces, intelligent impersonal forces. Your prayers do not reach them at all. There is only one way by which an adept, a Mahatma, can communicate, and that is through mantrams. And he has learned to live on the higher planes and be on their plane, and you know, and know all that, and think and act on those planes. So only an adept can do it. But they cannot be worshipped. This is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. He very clearly says, you cannot worship gods. That is not your object of worshipping God and obtaining favors, way of your higher evolution at all. You will never evolve if you depend upon the gods. You must depend upon your divinity within you, Atman. That is what you must worship. Now, look what Sri Krishna says in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Those who, through diversity of desires, where do we worship gods? We have them desires, want favors, so we worship. Those who, through diversity of desires, are deprived of spiritual wisdom, we worship gods because we do not have jnana. We think we can pray and obtain some favors. Krishna says, those who, through diversity of desires, are deprived of spiritual wisdom, adopt a particular right, subordinate to their own natures, and worship other gods. In whatever form a devotee desires with faith to worship, it is I alone who inspires him with constancy therein. And depending on that faith, he seeks the propitiation of that god, obtain the object of his wishes, as is ordained by me alone. But the reward of such a short-sighted man is temporary. So you may worship gods and obtain whatever you want, but that's temporary. It is lost again, because what you are seeking is perishable, part of your self. But the true worshipper, Krishna says, worship his superior spirit. Those who worship the gods, go to the gods, and those who worship me, come unto me. The ignorant, being unacquainted with my supreme condition, which is superior to all things, exempt from decay, believe me, who am unmanifested, to exist in a visible form. So, they are not, but they are to be honored. They are to be honored. And that is the true worship. Now, a very important part of that, we will just read and then stop for taking up questions. Speaking of the Dhyan Chauhan's, Secret Organ says, all are entitled to the grateful reverence of humanity. However, and man ought to be ever striving to help the divine evolution of ideas by becoming to the best of his ability co-worker with nature in the cyclic task. The ever unknowable, the incognizable Karana alone, the causeless cause of all causes, should have its shrine and altar on the holy and ever untrodden ground of our heart, invisible, intangible, unmentioned, save through the still small voice of our spiritual consciousness. Those who worship before it ought to do so in the silence and sanctified solitude of their souls.